thing, this little light of mine, as kids and sometimes as adults. I'm confident Pastor Brown has used that as an illustration from the pulpit more than once, probably at least a couple times. And we see that. But we as Christians, we're supposed to be noticed in our community, our family, in our workplace, in our church. And that's not to say that we're to be braggarts, but we're to do the Lord's work in a way that gives Him glory. That's the idea. The message tonight will be focusing on those aspects of our Christian walk as we go from a focus of... I should probably even clicky-click, huh? There it is. The message tonight will be focusing on those aspects of our Christian walk as we go from a focus of how we deal with ourselves internally with how we deal with those externally. We live in a world that needs both salt and light, and Jesus calls His disciples to be just that. He calls His disciples to be salt and light. So we're going to look at the inward purification, and that'll be in verse 13. We get to see, ye are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is henceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. So we know that ye are salt. A very similar start to verse 14, we'll see in just a bit. The disciples are told what they are. In the previous verses, the Beatitude, we see how they are to act. But now we're told what the titles are and what deeds are being held. The statement is made to a group of people and not just to a singular person, right? He says, ye are salt. We know that ye, the one of the great things about using our King James Bible is we know the difference between a singular you and a plural you, right? So this isn't Fred, you are the salt of the earth, or Paul, you are the salt of the earth, or Mark, you are the salt of the earth, but rather, you all, or if we were in South Carolina, I'm doing this for Brother Olson, y'all. I'm a southern gentleman. I'm wearing a bow tie. What do you think, Steve? It's tough. The title is expansive in nature and has no exclusion clause for the believer. He doesn't give the option. All right, you disciples, the ones who want to be salt, raise your hand. The ones who don't want to be salt, you raise your hand. Okay, anyone volunteer to be the light? Which one of you believers wants to be the light? Okay, we'll put you guys in this group, and we'll put you guys in this group. We're all supposed to be salt, aren't we? Ye are salt. Ye are salt. That means that if you've called the name of the Lord, that's your title. You are salt. And then you're supposed to be the salt of the earth. The disciples were not told that they were to be the salt of a valley or a town. They were told that they are the salt of the earth. The job of a Christian is not retained in the borders of his town, city, country, state, or country, but the expanse of the earth. We're the salt of the earth. You're not just the salt of the street you live on. As a Christian, we're the salt of the earth. And Christians should best be interested in world missions. Christians should be interested in missionaries. Christians should be supporting both. They should be interested in the affairs of their own nation. They should also be intimately aware of their surroundings. So here's some things more close to home. Right now, on your person or maybe in your vehicle, do you have a gospel track or a Bible track with you? In the pew doesn't count. They should be emptied by the pews, right? They should be gone by the time. Do you have a Bible tract with you? Have you ever been guilty of being out and not having a Bible tract with you? Because I've been guilty of that. Sophie, we were going to go, my four-year-old, we were going to walk into Aldi the other day. You may say, you shop at Aldi? Oh yeah, I do. And I love Aldi. We were about to walk into Aldi, and Sophie, the four-year-old, grabs a tract out of the car, and she goes, it's hard to understand her sometimes, but it was something along this line, I'm going to give it to the woman inside Aldi. And I'm like, all right, well, we'll see what she does. So she's carrying it around, she's got the tract with her, and then we get to the checkout aisle, and the nice lady's checking us out, and Sophie goes, I would like to give you this tract to read. Would you please read it? And the lady says, I will make sure I read this, I promise you. And she set it aside and took it. That doesn't happen if you don't have tracts with you, does it? You don't let your kids succeed. You don't let yourself succeed if you don't have an opportunity to do those types of things. When a conversation becomes spiritual in nature, do you seek an opportunity to intervene? Do people talk about spiritual things? All the time. You should be the one who has something to say about it. Do you know truth? Then you should be the one intervening. When was the last time you gave the gospel out? When was the last time you told somebody from the Bible that their worldview didn't align with the Bible? We're told that the Bible doesn't belong in politics. The Bible belongs in politics more than it's ever needed to be in politics. We need to have our conversation seasoned with that. This conversation that used to only happen within our neighborhood can now also travel throughout the whole world. You're the salt of the whole earth. How can we, if you're stationed in Oak Creek or Caledonia or South Milwaukee, how can you get the gospel out to the whole world? On the internet. There's opportunities available. You can tell people about Jesus Christ right through Facebook, or you can contact a missionary and find out how you can pray for them. You know, you can email missionaries and they'll respond to you. It's really crazy. If you tell them you're praying for them, they appreciate it. You can contact the whole world. You can season this whole world. But more so, we get to see that salt without savor. Salt without savor. Because in that passage, we get to see that salt, according to the Bible, is what? Without savor, it's not any good. How does your table salt lose its savor? How does it become of no use to the point of disregard? How does your table salt lose its savor? So I got a couple different points here we're going to look at. Someone made the claim the following. To be trodden underfoot. There was a species of salt in Judea, which was generated at the lake of, asphaltites, and was called bituminous salt, and easily rendered vapid, and of no use but to be spread in the part of the temple to prevent slipping in wet weather. That's what someone said. I don't know if that's true. Another person said this. So the only way for salt to lose its saltiness from a chemical perspective is a chemical reaction to occur. NaCl, who knows what NaCl is? Table salt, right? Is very stable substance. The chemical bond is very tight. You see, sodium and chloride are happy to become one and to share their one electron. Things work out really well for them. For salt to have lost its pungent saltiness or to change its physical composition, it would have to be diluted in water because it's non-reactive in a crystalline form. Or electricity, which would have to be introduced to force the sodium chloride into its ionic components, thereby changing its chemical composition. You know, it takes a lot for it to be moved off its foundation. And if you look at other spices, we have a whole variety of spices at our house. If you ever gone to our house, you see the spices. You know, most spices only have a shelf life of really 6 months. There may be some spices in your house that have a shelf life of 12 years, you know, like anise or something. I can't stand anise, but there's some spice that just makes its way for eternity in your house. But spices, they lose their ability to taste. You know, cumin loses its cuminiousness, and chili powder and all those types of things, they lose parts of their aspect. But salt, you can pretty much keep forever and ever and ever and ever. And you know what it is? Salt. It's salty. But perhaps, for the Christian, for the salt of the earth, to lose his degree of saltiness, the gospel would have to be diluted in his life. The person is a complacent Christian. The person who does not protect the truth of the gospel in his life and from the rainfall of the other ideas and other ideologies, Buddhism, Islam, or American culture, the person mixes truth with a myriad of other ideologies. Christianity and other things don't mix because we know who truth is. Truth is in Jesus Christ. And when we start mixing truth with Islam or these other things. Chrislam doesn't work. It's an oxymoron. And as Christians, we need to make sure that the truth we're giving people is pure. We have to make sure that what we're giving them is useful information. What we're giving them is life-changing information. We don't want to dilute the message. And then we'll get to that in a second, but salt with savor. Either way, we are to be a vessel worth carrying the message. Salt preserves. Even in our time of struggle in this land, Christianity has greatly slowed the putrefaction of the United States. Christians can continue to have an impact today. Be good for something and to make sure you're ready to be used in the army of the Lord. Aren't you thankful that there's still people standing up for righteousness in this country? Is there as many as there should be? No, but you have an impact even in your own family to slow things down, to keep it around. I want to see more people get saved before Jesus Christ comes back. I don't know when He's coming back, but until then, we have to occupy. We have to be diligently working. We have to be pleading for souls. We can make an impact. But when we look at the outward illumination, when we look at verse 14a and 15, it says, "Ye are the light of the world," in verse 14. In verse 15, it says, "Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house." So the first thought here is, you are light. Ye are light. The same way that Jesus declared the disciples salt, here He tells them that they are all light. Ye, or you, all are light. There once again is no exclusion for the believer. There's not a caveat of not having a certain spiritual gift or not being a person with a silver tongue. Doesn't matter if you don't talk no good. No, people who don't talk no good are used by God all the time. People who are uneducated. I believe I heard Brother Reno talking to somebody. The Jewish leaders perceived Peter and John to be unlearned men, right? But God uses people. God uses them as a tool. In fact, He confounds the wise with people just like us. He uses us. Our spiritual gifts, the horsepower He puts underneath the hood, is no excuse not to be a light. We're to be a light regardless of our circumstances. For us, we cannot hide behind those who are doing the work of the Lord and say it's already being covered. There cannot be enough light that needs to be shared with others. I have yet to hear of a church that has too much help. Have you ever heard of the church that has too much help? I'm sorry, we just can't use anyone for the Ride for Life this year. All the slots for helping are booked this year. So sorry. We're so, so sorry. We're going to have to turn away half the people that want to help with Vacation Bibles because there's too many. We're going to have to turn people. Churches are pleading for help. We're not turning away. So many Christians think it's the responsibility of light is laid on the shoulders of the pastors and deacon. It's not. The moment you become a disciple, you are picking up that mantle. You are to be the light. You are to do the work. So the light of the world, we're finally getting to the slide, but just as before, the occupation of that area, your light as you travel is not limited by geography. This year we went to Puerto Rico. And we had many adventures as a group. And I don't think of place, I think often think of the place that we went and the things we did. We had a group of people that ranged from, we had a teenager with us. We had someone who was a little older. I'm not going to say how old Jim is, but he's older than 50. Older than dirt. I did not say it, his wife did. But each one has a unique story of how they ended up on the mission trip. Somehow someone isn't able to go. Another person went on the trip. Another person, they saved, the teenagers saved their nickels and dimes and pennies and made their way on the trip. Someone who didn't think they were going to go at the last minute, God found a way for them to go. They all had different unique stories about how they went. But regardless of the background, they all shared the same light. They all passed out the same material and had the honor of serving God away from their home. I didn't hear any complaining, and trust me, we weren't staying at the Hilton. We're just staying in some rather modest accommodations. But they took their money, their time, and their efforts to a land where they knew not a soul. In the same way, we must also consider the idea that we need to have this light in our community. If I was to have all the lights shut off in the auditorium, and then I got out my flashlight and turned it on, the light would stream out of the flashlight and move forward. In fact, I brought my flashlight. I'm not going to have a turn off the lights because I don't want to scare anybody. But I got this flashlight. I got it for Christmas a couple years ago. I use it frequently, so sometimes it doesn't work, and the technology gremlins are good at coming out during this stuff. You may not see it, but you might see a light on the ceiling, right? That light doesn't discriminate. It just goes. It doesn't think twice about it. It just moves. It doesn't slow down. It doesn't stop. It moves. It always goes. It's constant. Light is a fantastic thing. Light is wonderful. I'll leave it up for a second. We'll see how long the battery lasts. I see you guys staring up. It's either the rapture coming or you're looking at the light. I don't know. But when we see that, we get to see it doesn't discriminate its path based on its appearance or kind. The light would not take any turn or be slowed down. The light would simply dispel darkness like it's doing right there. Light and darkness do not occupy the same space. Light is a valuable commodity. Light grows things and shows things. Darkness only covers and slowly kills things. There it is. Doesn't discriminate. Do we discriminate with our light? Ooh, I'm busy. I don't like that person. Oh, see, it stopped doing it now. It's discriminating against me. No, it happens. But the idea is this, is we decide who we're going to shine the light on, and we decide when we're going to use it. That's not what God has called us to do. He called us to be a light. Ye are light. Ye are light. So we're going to look at the forward manifestation. Cities long ago, I'll read the verse here too. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. A city on a hill cannot be hid. Cities long ago were built upon a hill. A high tower was built upon the city wall. And in the tower was a watchman who could see the approach of an enemy. His job was to warn people, who in turn closed the gates and prepared the battle. The position of the city on a hill with a valley between them and the outlying mountains served as natural fortification. You don't miss the city on the hill, do you? You see it forever and ever away. In fact, in some ways, if you were to walk outside right now, I don't know how dark it is, but you can tell where Milwaukee is from here just by standing on the ground. How can you tell where Milwaukee is? Because there's a big glow from Milwaukee. Look that way and you see a big glow. When we were living in a country town, we'd drive away from our hometown of Oshkosh, because we're leaving it, you'd always see the big glow. You could always tell where the Fox Valley was because there was a big glow there. When you looked towards the west part, it was dark. And in the same way, when you had hills and mountains, you can see what? The city that's on the hill. You can see it. But here I use the watchman as kind of being the person to warn the folks if there's danger coming. And so I'm just going to briefly compare a watchman and the hearer only. And then I'll kind of explain that in a moment. But look at a watchman. A watchman, or a Christian, should obey like Abraham, should trust like Isaac, should serve like Isaiah, should stand like Elijah, should be bold like Peter and John, walk like Enoch, flee temptation like Joseph, work like Noah, testify like Paul, be convincing like Elijah, suffer like Moses, and be yielded like Stephen. And then the antithesis is the person who only hears the things, like a lot of Christians who get saved, they hear the nice message, but that works for other people. They do this. This is what the hearer only does. He gives lip service. His heart goes after coveting. His light turned to darkness. Blinded eyes, deaf ears, understanding dulled, perversion of the will, hating God's men, seared conscience, sealed with a strong delusion, deception, death. And I know this passage isn't specifically speaking of the watchman, but the idea is that we are active in having holiness required to be responsible for keeping that city is important. We're supposed to live a certain way, aren't we? Do we rub dirt on the light? When you got someone who's working in a lighthouse, what do? They make sure the light is clean. They make sure it works, unlike my flashlight here. They make sure things like that work, don't they? They check them out. They clean the lens. They want to make sure it goes as far as it can go. Many disciples know they need to be disciplined. And as the one bearing light, we must ensure we're doing so in the right spirit and in the right manner. It's been said by many people, and it's so true, you're the closest people get to seeing Jesus Christ. You're the closest many people come to reading a Bible. And a heavy weight to be sure, but the reality is that it's our job to make sure the light is pure, bright, protected, and unhindered. 2 Corinthians 4:3. Turn there. I'll have you guys just look at that. 2 Corinthians 4:3. Read it together. But if our gospel be hid, it is hid to them that are lost. Who's the one hiding the gospel? Who's the one hiding the gospel? It's a big deal. You may be the only chance someone has to hear the gospel. This verse, I got so excited. This verse, verse 16, is the first verse I ever memorized. And if I said it to you right now, I'd stammer and I couldn't repeat it because I'd be too nervous. Now, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. First verse I ever memorized. So anyway, that's just for you to know. But after two analogies in a row, we see the application of the analogies. Jesus Christ provides purpose for the mission. The mission is to get people to look up. The mission is not to become an advertisement for me, but to get people to put their eyes on God. When we get to see that you're supposed to light shining before them, the word shine means to emit rays of light, to give light, to beam with steady radiance, to exhibit lightness or splendor as the sun shines by day. The moon shines by night. Shining differs from sparkling, glistening, glittering, as it usually implies a steady, radiant, or emission of light. Whereas the latter words usually imply irregular or interrupted radiation. This distinction is not always observed, and we may say the fixed star shines as well as they sparkle. But we never say the sun or moon sparkles. I have girls at home, so I see a lot of glitter in my house. It's always like in the carpet. I don't know what they do. Like they rub it into the carpet just to see how long it can stay there. They better never let me catch them. Anyway. But when you see a piece of glitter, it only shines for a second, right? My flashlight only glitters, apparently. But the sun never stops shining, does it? And unless there's cloud cover, almost all the time, if you have a clear sky, you can see the moon, or at least part of the moon. It always shines. The moon is shining. The sun is shining. Consistency in our walk will keep us from being a spiritual glimmer or a sparkle. We want the lasting power of continued and faithful light. That we would be compared with the sun or moon rather than a distant star. What's your Christian walk like? Are you a glimmer? Do you guys know who the glimmers are? Do you know who the sparkles are? Do you know those who just lasted like that? Have you ever talked about do you remember that one guy that used to go to church? Oh, what was his name? And you would think about that guy and you and a couple guys would be like, oh man, I remember him. He went on visitation for for 1 year. He was so good. What was his name? Oh, what happened to them? And you can't remember it. And it's not because they went to another church and grew in Christ. It's because they just vanished. Do we all know people like that? Do we all know the person who came in wearing their best suit, wearing their best bow tie, wearing their best all this stuff, and they're living it up, and they just burn out? Man, I will take faithfulness over talent any day of the week. Just stay. Just keep shining. Just keep shining. Just keep shining. We need more light. We don't need more glitter. Got plenty of glitter in the carpet. I'm sure we have plenty of glitter in this carpet somewhere. But the idea is that we do need to be faithful. We should exude a trustworthiness that people know what they're getting when they get us. That's a challenge the disciples were faced with and struggled with. As Brother Reno has been talking about Peter, when he was confronted, he denied Christ, didn't he? You know, and if you look in the book of Galatians, Paul stood face to face with Peter because Peter had stumbled and tripped. And in our Christian walk, we stumble and trip. We struggle with being solid Christians at times. We're people, and we need to be as faithful as we can. Get up. We need people to be faithful. And then to be seen. The previous message I spoke of wanting to avoid self-promotion. We should avoid self-promotion at all time. People will mistake that with cowering and being afraid or being so far in the background that no one can observe you. People don't generally like to be watched while they work. Have you ever had someone watch you as you type? Have you? Because I'm telling you, the struggle is real. Can't type anymore. Typing when someone's watching is terrible. And I know those who have gone through that will share some tears later. But having someone watch you work, for some people, it's very uncomfortable. For someone like a professional athlete, they're used to having people watch them do what they do. As a pastor, you get used to having people watch you do what you do. And there's certain things you're used to. But many people want to be in the background. In a world that is okay with you being a Christian, as long as you neither act like one or tell others about it, it's even more important to be seen doing what God commands you to do. We should feel no discomfort in praying in a restaurant or handing out Bible information, singing a Christian song, or reading the Bible in public. There are a million applications we could share, but the point is that there are tasks that we need to be doing that are so normal we don't even feel the eyes of the world on us anymore. Do I get nervous if I have someone watching me ride a bike? I should. That's a joke. But anyway, I don't get nervous walking. I don't get nervous going into a restaurant and ordering a meal. You ever see a little kid try to order a meal the first time? They get really nervous. Their face turns red, or some do. And kids get nervous when they do it. As a Christian, we should be so used to sharing the gospel. We should be so used of pleading for souls. We should be so used to praying in public. We should be so used to doing what we do as Christians that we're constantly shining in public. You can tell that people are very uncomfortable being a Christian outside of church. Christianity doesn't end at those doors. Christianity is for the whole world. Remember, ye are salt. Ye are light. You're the light of the world. Ye are the salt of the earth. That doesn't exclude being out in public. To glorify God. To glorify God. It's the reason we are doing this for the God that created you. We're doing it to glorify Him, aren't we? Is it about me getting promotion? Does it matter how many people I led to Christ? Put another notch in the belt? Does it matter about me at all? Does it matter about you at all? It matters about the God who created you. Why do we spend our time with a vacation Bible school? Why do we spend our time going door to door with little or no direct fruit? Why do we spend all that money on missions? The answer, for the glory of God. We are interested in souls because God is interested in souls. We're interested in families because God is interested in families. We're interested in studying because God is interested in us studying. The way we behave is not to merit heaven anymore as a Christian, but to glorify the one that saved me from hell, the one that loved me enough to send His Son to the cross for my sins. And then one passing thought here. The point of all these Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount, being salt and light, is giving the Christian knowledge of how to please God. It'd be a shame if we lost sight of that in our walk. I know many churches that seem to have lost sight of that, And it's a frightening proposition to have lost your first love. Jesus Christ is supposed to be number one for us, isn't he? Being Baptist is secondary for me, maybe third. Being a Christian, being a lover of Christ, being a good witness, being a good dad, being all those things are number one. But to glorify God, to glorify Christ, that's our primary role. And I know I didn't talk about it a whole lot, but I'm just pleading with you once again. This message was for Christians. It was for those who already have accepted the free gift of salvation. And what do I mean by that? If there hasn't been a moment that you've only trusted Jesus Christ as your Savior, only Him, not your works, not your religion, not that you're a good person, not that if there's anything in your mind that you believe is going to get you to heaven other than Jesus Christ, you're fooling yourself. You need to call solely on Jesus Christ to save you from those sins. If you haven't thought about it before, I just consider you to do it tonight. There's a track in front of you in the pews, I'm sure. Otherwise, there's plenty of good people here to walk you through it. Pastor Brown or Brother Reno, or if you're a lady, my wife or one of the other wives, maybe the person who brought you. But don't leave here tonight without knowing Jesus Christ.